You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
David, welcome in.
How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for making time for us. I've been pretty concerned about you. So I kind of let our listeners know that you've been dealing with a bout with COVID-19, and I know how healthy you are, triathlete, and you take really good care of yourself. So if you wouldn't mind, kind of share with us, how do you think you contracted it, and how bad did it get, and what got you out of it?
So I'm pretty careful, and I am in good shape. I'm a runner, and my lungs are good. But I, for whatever reason, I just started feeling sick, and I don't know the answer. I keep track. You would not be shocked to know this, Anita. I keep track in my calendar anytime I have a fever because I would just want to know. And so I hadn't had a fever since June 23rd of 2019. And all of a sudden, last Tuesday, so like 10 days ago, 11 days ago, I started feeling that ache. And when you get older, you realize what aches are from age, what aches are from running or working out, and what aches are from, oh no, I'm about to have a fever. And it was the fever ache. And all of a sudden I had a fever, and I said, I better get tested. I don't know that I was exposed to anyone with COVID. I don't know. Is it from going to the grocery store? I wear a mask all the time. Is it from a worker who may have been in my house? I mean, I just don't know the answer. And what the doctors had told me is there is no answer. What they did say is be prepared for what this is. And this is a marathon, not a sprint. So I'm almost 2 weeks in. And today is my second day without fever. I did have a day and a half last week without fever, but then it came back. I have no taste, no smell, which is very, very bizarre. I'm taking zinc and vitamin D and vitamin C and zinc capsules. And I'm drinking juice and having soup and lots of it, a lot of liquid. I'm taking some sort of like emergency and water. I'm just doing everything I can to urinate as often as possible. And if it weren't for the death rate and the fear of going to a hospital and not being able to breathe, I would tell you it's just a terrible, terrible flu. But the reality of worrying about your lungs creates a level of anxiety that I don't have when I'm sick. Normally when I'm sick, I just say this stinks and I'm sick. But with COVID, I just have this sort of feeling like I have leprosy, that when I tell people I have COVID, they sort of judge or think that I'm not responsible. And then I have the anxiety of checking my pulse oximeter and temperature all the time, worrying about, does my chest feel heavy? Does my chest hurt? Is my breathing labored? Should I go to a hospital? If I do, I may not get out. I mean, all the fears that a nice Jewish boy has is the fears that I have, and they're real, and it stinks. So when you layer anxiety on top of COVID, it leads to a lot of introspection and a lot of time staring at walls and just thinking. And I appreciate the distraction today, Anita.
Well, God bless, David. I'm so glad that you made it out of it okay. You sound good, and just know how much we appreciate you joining us this afternoon. Thank you, my friend. I've just spent the first 30 minutes of the show talking about Major League Baseball and what happened this week in regard to the Hall of Fame, or I should say lack thereof. And just to kind of put a Cliff Notes version on what I've said and what I think should happen is that, you know, I think we should acknowledge that there was a steroid era, and there should be a time capsule of from this year to that year. Major League Baseball turned a blind eye. Here are the ones that we kind of think. Here are the ones that we know. Here's the ones that we don't know. But who knows? Anyone could have been using it. But here's an era of baseball that performance enhancing drugs existed. And I feel like these guys were on the bad side of the witch hunt that took place. I'm curious to get your thoughts on what you think all went down this week, and what is your take on that nobody will be inducted this year?
Well, I'm just curious, is the era over in your mind? So here's what I mean. There are still players doing performance enhancing drugs. There's no doubt about that. Before steroids, players were taking amphetamines, little green pills, that were available in clubhouses the way Tic Tacs are available. They were literally just in jars. A little funny story, do you know why, if you've been in a clubhouse, that there are soft serve ice cream machines in a lot of clubhouses and ice cream? The reason is that when players would take amphetamines, the only way to come down after a game and to allow the chance of sleep is to eat ice cream. So players would eat ice cream after every game. And that's how ice cream ended up being, you know, in press boxes. Not because people in the press were doing it, just because that was something that was became part of baseball. So performance-enhancing drugs are required because of the schedule of baseball. Playing 162 games in 180 days, the grind of the season, the desire to stay healthy, trying to find a way to stay on the field. So I just don't know whether or not the era is over, and I don't know when the era began, because it's impossible to tell you. So then the next question is, how do you differentiate? And that then goes to players who lied about it, players who pretended that they weren't doing it when they were, versus players who acknowledged doing it only after they were caught, versus players who acknowledged it even when they weren't caught. And there are players in each of those categories. And so what you're asking is for Hall of Fame voters who are writers in good standing in the Baseball Writers Association of America, who have been writing about baseball, let's say, for 10 years, who then get a vote, you're asking them to make decisions based on information that they may have or they may not have, that they think they may know or that they really don't know. And that's the dangerous part, right, Anita, where you've got people not voting for Roger Clemens because they think he did steroids or they think he lied about it or they think that they're upset with him because he blamed his wife for doing steroids and it was never him, or that they were robbed of his final game where they cheered him in the 2003 World Series and all of a sudden he came back and unretired and won Cy Young's, right? So writers have their own biases toward players, but that's happened since the Hall of Fame started. So nothing is really different today than it's been any other year. And the only difference is that we now have grown up around players like Bonds and Clemens and next year A-Rod and Big Poppy. And we are now questioning why writers do what they do. Anita, why wouldn't you ask the question why Andre Dawson was a Hall of Famer in his 10th year of eligibility but not his third? He didn't play an extra game. He didn't have an extra at-bat. What exactly changed? And that's the way I feel about all these players. Curt Schilling is worth 70% of the vote last year, 71% of the vote this year. Does that mean next year he's worth 75%? Did he all of a sudden become a Hall of Famer? Or does his social media rantings disqualify him? The answer is writers get to answer that because they've earned the right because those are the rules. That's all.
So what do you feel needs to change, David?
Just because it doesn't work the way everybody wants it to work does not mean things need to change. When you're talking about a Hall of Fame or any sort of competitively selected position, can we do it without offending you? Let's talk about the presidential election. The people who want to change the way the presidential election happened were the people who supported the people who lost. The people who want to change the way local school board elections happen is when the school board member they want, whether it's their own parent or their own sibling, whatever the case is, when you lose, you want change. Why do you think I fired every manager I ever fired? Because we weren't winning games the way I wanted to, even if my expectations were wrong. Because I'm not going to blame my expectations. I'm going to blame someone else and then fire them or claim that the system isn't fair. When teams in a small market don't win, they complain because they don't have enough revenue and high enough payroll. When you're Tampa, you complain not that your payroll is too low because your payroll is okay because you keep winning games. You complain that you don't get enough revenue sharing from teams in your division and you're forced to compete with teams every day whose payroll is four times your size. So everyone has a reason to complain. People who love Bonds and Clemens complain that they're not in the Hall. People who agree with Curt Schilling complain he's not in the Hall. There is no fix required just because you don't get what you want.
What do you think we can anticipate for next season? As you said, 2022, you've got Alex and Big Poppy that are added to this list. Do you think this is going to be the same, where it's going to be another year where nobody gets inducted?
let's face it, A-Rod is a case study in what not to do as a player. He was the most selfish player that I ever came across. He was the single most polarizing figure because of what he did on the field and off, the way he cheated and then lied about it, the way he continued to lie about his steroid use and then came clean only after he had no other choice. If you're looking to learn more, you can read all about what happened with him and Miami and all the different people involved there. And then he went on a rehabilitation tour, the likes of which you never see, which includes dating Jennifer Lopez. You've never seen a rehabilitation tour like he's on. And it has worked perfectly. It was calculated perfectly. It was done at a certain time period. Everything has been scripted. The final act is his Hall of Fame candidacy. And what will be interesting is if writers have fallen for it and they don't penalize him the way they have penalized other players in his position, because if they are consistent, then he will never get into the Hall of Fame. If they are inconsistent and they believe in the rehabilitation, then he is a first ballot Hall of Famer. If they want to penalize him by not letting him in on the first ballot, but letting him on the second ballot because they're showing them something, that to me is almost an abuse of voting power, because nothing A-Rod will do between year one and year two will change whether he should be in the Hall of Fame. His credentials won't get better or worse. His rehabilitation will not get better or worse, because it can't get better than it is. So I can't wait. My prediction is that he does not make it into the Hall of Fame, because the inconsistency of that position would be so stark that it would be almost inexcusable.
David Sampson joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. It will be fascinating when that ballot does surface in 2022. It really will be. Let's turn our attention to what's going on here in our own backyard. And I do want to dive into the Yankees in a second and talk to you a little bit about a hot stove in regard to the Yankees. But more importantly, the last 48 to 72 hours, GameStop and what's been going on with the stock market has been what's trending. And Steve Cohen, new owner of the Mets, is some way, shape, or form involved with this. And apparently, you know, and I sent you some articles this morning, you and I text earlier today, you know, reports are that he's lost a ton of money in regard to the hedge fund that he's connected with. Now, the Mets did release this statement from Steve Cohen. I'm going to read it really quick, David, for those that are listening. Quote, unquote, "I've really enjoyed the back and forth with Mets fans on Twitter, which was unfortunately overtaken this week by misinformation unrelated to the Mets that led to our family getting personal threats. So I'm going to take a break for now. We have other ways to listen to your suggestions and remain committed to doing that. I love our team, this community, and our fans, who are the best in baseball. Bottom line is that this week's events in no way affect our resources and drive to put a championship team on the field. Let's go Mets. Hashtag let's go Mets." And that is a statement from Steve Cohen that the Mets released earlier today. So I'm curious. I just want to tee you up there. What do you know about Steve Cohen? What do you know about his involvement in regard to all that has gone down with GameStop, and your thoughts about him kind of 86ing, taking a break from social media?
Well, I did a whole show of my Friday's Nothing Personal, which is a podcast that you can download and subscribe to anywhere you get podcasts, also on YouTube. Friday's show, the first half hour, was about what's going on Wall Street with GameStop and Steve Cohen's involvement. Let me just be clear to your audience. Steve Cohen's ability to increase payroll with the Mets has not changed one bit since this situation. He has a hedge fund, which means he manages money, mostly his own, but also other people's, and they make investments. Some investments go down, some investments go up. This is an investment that he had in another hedge fund, where that hedge fund needed additional money put in by its investors. Steve Cohen had to add money to an existing investment to protect the original investment. That's all. There is no change to whether or not Trevor Bauer will be a Met. There's no change to whether Lindor can get a extension. This is not the Fred Wilpon, Bernie Madoff situation. Not even close. These are paper losses that Steve Cohen has. These are additional investments that he would be making in the ordinary course of running his other business. There's nothing to worry about. The Twitter is a far funnier story because he tried to be the cool guy. And Steve Cohen's a lot of things. He's not the cool guy. He is the billionaire who wants to be normal, like Mark Cuban dressing with his Mavericks players in the clubhouse and taking warm-ups on the court, trying to be one of the guys. Mark Cuban is not one of the guys. He'll never be one of the guys. Steve Cohen is in that position, too. When you're a new owner, you want to hang out with players. You want to talk to fans. You want to feel normal. But guess what? Having a Twitter account does not make you normal. Interacting with fans on Twitter doesn't make you feel normal, because if it does, you're in the wrong business. Steve Cohen deleting his Twitter account is about as interesting to me as watching paint dry. And the reason is that I knew from the beginning why he was on Twitter, and that was simply to make fans believe that he was one of them. He would always say, I'm just a fan. I'm a fan like you are. Give me suggestions. Tell me what uniforms we should wear. It was a joke. So fans of the Mets, don't worry. Your payroll is going up. He's willing to lose money by owning the Mets for the first couple of years, because owning a team early gives you depreciation and other sort of fiscal benefits that he's enjoying. He would like to get a World Series because that would be cool. And GameStop and Twitter and Reddit, none of that matters to Steve Cohen at the end of the day.
David, before we let you go, last but not least, let's talk about the Yankees and Hot Stove. Tanaka this week announces that he's going to step away from the Yankees and step away from baseball. But at the same time, they add Corey, of course, and they secure Lemieux. Your thoughts on what the Yankees have done this offseason, and what are your expectations for them heading into this coming season?
The Yankees are acting like the Marlins, and that's what's strange. What I used to do when I ran them for the 16 years of my 18-year career, Anita, is I would tell our baseball people, hey, could you please find me the comeback of the year winner for next season? Find me someone who we can sign, who we don't have to pay a lot of money to, who's going to outperform his contract, and then win comeback player of the year. Because that's the best chance we have to compete with teams who sign the best free agents with the highest likelihood of success on the field. The Yankees are always a team who signs free agents, brings in new players, and that gives them the advantage year after year after year. Corey Kluber and Jameson, Tyon from the Pirates, those are reclamation projects. Those are guys who have been hurt, who have not had a lot of starts over the last year or two, and those are Marlins-type signings. And to let Tanaka go and to sign those guys instead and to hope that they become the number two and number three starter behind your ace, Gerrit Cole, to me is foolish, in that if you have to do it like we did, then you do it and you hope you're right. If you don't have to do it, you really shouldn't do it. So by the Yankees doing it, it means that they were told from above where their payroll can be and where it will be, and that's the only choice Brian Cashman had. He didn't want long-term liabilities. He took some flyers on some pitchers, and we'll see what happens. In terms of re-signing LeMahieu, they gave him 6 years at $15 million a year because it helps with their luxury tax by not having him on the books at a bigger number. He's not going to be good for 6 years. He's more of a three-year player. But instead of giving him $30 million a year for 3 years, you give him $15 for six and assume the last three will be a wash. But you're not better with LeMahieu because he was on your team last year. So you have to ask yourself, are we better? And I'm just not sure the Yankees are.
Let's end on this. Within the next 2 years, will the Mets be a better franchise and a more winning organization than the Yankees? Yes or no?
I can't answer that, and here's why. I have to know if Steve Cohen is going to be a meddling owner or not. If he's going to have a huge case of new owner-itis, then the Mets will never be anything. But if he lets baseball people do their jobs, and if Theo joins them, which I expect him to do next season, and work with Zach Scott, no longer Jared Porter, and they are given the freedom and the money to make baseball decisions, the Mets will be a successful franchise. And if they are allowed to both build their farm system and sign free agents, then they will be a team like the Yankees. But if Steve Cohen decides that he knows more and acts like a fan, then the Mets will never win ever.
David Sampson, you're always so great when you join us. God bless you, my friend. Again, I'm so glad that you won your bout with COVID, and it's great to hear your voice.
It's ongoing, Anita. So I want people to know it's ongoing. I'm in the clear only with two more days of no fever, and then I can leave my COVID room where I've been for 10 days. But please take it seriously, because it's the anxiety of it all that is so crippling, worried about will you be a statistic. And I'm far too young to ever want to be that kind of statistic.
If you can share with our listeners, where they could find you, your podcast, your shows, and all that good stuff.
Thank you. I have a show called Nothing Personal with David Sampson. It's 5 days a week. You can find it wherever you get your podcast. There's a YouTube channel, Nothing Personal with David Sampson. We talk about sports, entertainment, politics. I break down stories that are happening, that are trending, and I tell you really what the story is. It's 45 minutes of just me, no callers, no guests. And we have fun, and the show is really growing and is successful, and I love doing it every day. So join the party.
You got it, my friend. Be safe. Enjoy the Super Bowl, we'll talk soon.
I can't wait. Have a good day.
You got it.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.